The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Glenn Beck.
All right, here's some of the questions that we should have our president asked today. He's, you know, he's in Argentina at the G20. Mr. President, how was your meeting with China's president? Mr. President, have you ended the trade war? Mr. President, insert anything relevant here that might show that we've solved any problems that actually will affect us. But that's not going to happen. Instead, we're going to have, Mr. President, can you tell us what you said to Robert Mueller? Mr. President, you told the American people that you've never had any dealings in Russia, and now yesterday you came out and said, yeah, I was trying to build a Trump Tower in Moscow at the time. What? No problem with that. Oh, dear God. Mr. President, could I ask you this? Why do you make it so tough? Why do you do this to your supporters? Stop it. You make it really hard to defend. Because what we have to say is, no, it doesn't matter. And we all know that lying matters. We all know that. But we don't say that because by saying that, then the press has more ammunition to come after you. But it hurts us because we have to say, what? It doesn't matter. Of course it matters. You say you care about us, and I believe you. Can you just not lie to us? Just don't lie to us. Since he was president, how many times? 11 times? 15 times since he was president? Did he say, I have no dealings in Russia? Nobody, to the best of my recollection, had any dealings with the Russians.
About 14.
14 times.
I mean,
why?
Why?
We have now the signed document where you signed off on a letter of intent to build a Trump Tower in Moscow while you were saying there was nothing going on. Why?
And
nobody would have had a problem if you would have just come out and said, yeah, I'm trying to build a Trump Tower. What? I'm a businessman.
I try to build them all over the world.
Right.
Right. Everyone knows that. That's his business.
That's your business. Why would you do that? So now we've got really, really important meetings. The President Xi is... This is one of the most important meetings. This could decide whether or not the world goes to war in the next 2 years. Literally, it's that important. Meeting with the president of China. Now, the president said last night, you know, that he's not sure he even wants to do a deal with President Xi. Why? Because of all the tax revenue coming in from China, because of the trade, you know, embargo or the trade tariffs. Oh, come on. Now, I'm hoping that is just hyperbole getting ready to meet. That's, you know, that's what you do. Well, I'm not really interested in that car over there that I've been drooling over for the last 2 years. I don't know. I'm not really in the market for the car right now. I just happen to be, well, I live across town and I drove 45 minutes in traffic to get to your car lot, but I'm not really that interested. Hopefully it's that kind of thing. Hopefully it's just a negotiating tactic. But the one thing that I have learned is absolutely nothing this president said or says or tweets should be discussed. Just what he does. Just that. If we were just looking at what this president does, he'd be pretty popular. He wouldn't be having all of these problems. But because of what the president says, people get their panties in a bunch. Look at how much every time he tweets, the press goes crazy. And you know what? Oh, what's so infuriating about this is the way the press reacts every single time. Once again, I read two stories from two people at CNN that said, you know, this is the first time that I felt we really have him here.
They always
really
feel bad.
You said that every time.
It's always the first time for them. It's
this
great.
Is really the first time. Really? When he was on the bus talking about, you know, touching women, you didn't feel that?
It's like a prostitute constantly over and over losing their virginity.
Yes.
That's what happens with the breast.
Yes.
Every time.
Every time.
Every time it's brand new.
Yeah, every time.
I think Madonna wrote a song about that at one point. It's amazing the press can continue to do it. You're right. I mean, and the thing is about what Trump says and tweets, he himself says over and over again that he's negotiating, right? We're not supposed to, you know, talk like people will talk when we were complaining about tariffs. A lot of people will say, well, he's just negotiating. And, you know, I mean, I think that one he has implemented, so that no longer is really a talking point. But the point is, he says he's negotiating all the time. So if he's negotiating, he has some agenda to win some battle he's trying to do behind the scenes or whatever. Well, there's no reason to listen to those words specifically. And it's a double standard because I would not have accepted that from Barack Obama because when he said things, I wanted to hold them to them. But, you know, but Trump, it makes an art a form of it. He's not even this is a great point in that his supporters should not have to deal with trying to defend these things.
Look, I know
he
this.
Didn't even do anything wrong trying to build it. His business is building towers in other countries. This is what he does for a living.
Do you remember how many times when I was at Fox and we were at the very height of all the controversy around me, how many times I came on the air and I said, I'm really sorry because I know it makes it hard to defend me.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I used to say that all the time because I would say something stupid and it would be taken out of context or whatever, or it was just plain stupid. And I knew that it caused you trouble to defend me. And you'd be like, oh, thanks, Glenn. Thanks. Now you've added that to the pile. Okay? And I know that. And that's what I'm begging the president. Please, please, if you look at Trump's policies, he's a good president.
Some of them are really good. I mean, I think the best example...
The trade thing is kind of a big one that's starting to really scare the hell out of me. But
the best example of this is Russia. If you look at what he says about Russia, you would think, oh, well, he's way too friendly with Vladimir Putin. A lot of people believe, you know, you see that and it's notable. I mean, I know
because it is notable on what he says.
Right. But if you look at what he does, his policies are pretty hawkish against
Russia.
Very
hawkish.
The administration has taken a lot of major steps against Russia through this period. This has not been a presidency that has kissed the butt of Vladimir Putin.
Nope.
Just because he said a few nice things in press conferences does not mean that the actions of the administration go down that road. And I think if you realize that Trump is a guy who he's a big talker, right? He's saying that, you know, I have the best of everything in the world. And, you know, for years when he was back in the entertainment days, people would know, okay, he's saying that, but it's bluster. He's talking big. We get that. We're not really going to pay attention. We know he's not actually meaning it's the biggest or best in the world. And this is the thing here. It's like because he says something in public or he says something to the press or he's fighting with the press and says something defensive like I have absolutely no business with Russia, you can't take it seriously because you don't know what the truth is until
right.
That's why we've been saying with the Mueller thing. Let's just wait for it to come out and we'll read it.
And here's what liberals and the press don't understand. They look at us and this is what's so frustrating is because there's – look, 70% of this nation sick to death of this crap. I think it's actually 80% that they're exhausted by this. They don't want to play this game anymore. They don't want to fight. They just want everybody just to shut up and do their job. Okay. And what the press doesn't understand is that there are many people in America that are so tired of the lies of the press, not just the Trump lies, but the lies that have gone on forever and the double standard forever. Bush hates black people. They didn't care. How can you possibly say that? What's his name? Dick Cheney blew up the levees. George Bush knew about the towers. When 60% of Democrats believed that in 2005, that George Bush had something to do with 9/11. Now, of course, they deny it and say, we're not into conspiracy theories. Well, the evidence is there. Okay? And that came from a press not being a bulldog on that stuff. They were at best neutral. It's why I went on the air and said, we're going to get to the bottom of the FEMA camp thing. I'm going to find out if they're happening or they're not. I'm going to go in with an open mind and I'm going to say, are they happening or not? I get bashed as a conspiracy theorist because I said, are they happening or not? We're going to tell you next week.
And the answer, by the way, was no.
It was no. And quite honestly, I was pretty sure the answer was no, unless Dick Cheney had been building underground camps.
Right. But look at the way the press approached the birtherism stuff, right? They went out and they did segments on it, debunking it every day. They'd show you all the documents. They'd go back and show all the history, the reports in the newspapers. They did such a thorough job debunking that. They did not do that with Bush. They did not. They did not try to debunk. They don't try to debunk the crazy conspiracies against Trump.
Nope.
They don't do it. They just let them sit out there and don't really answer them. And again,
and
that's
how
you lose credibility.
At times with him, in fact, they spread them through speculation.
Mm-hmm.
They just spread them, and then they don't correct them afterwards, and they never apologize for saying, you know what, we were wrong on this one, and make a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about your apology that happened one time, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, after you've spent 3 weeks saying it.
Yeah, and it's not universal. There, are, I mean, I've heard Jake Tapper specifically go
after
conspiracy theories even against Trump and
Jake
take
Tapper,
him on.
I think, is in a different category
right,
most times.
It's not universal, but it's common.
It
is
way
too
common,
it's why so many people agree when he says, you know, the enemy of the people, because it feels that way a lot of times.
Right. So look at the border. So when you're sitting here, media, you're like, how can they just keep putting up with the president lying about this? Because in our minds, this is what happens. A, I know the president lies. I get it. I thought I was voting for the Pope. I was voting for Mother Teresa. Please, I've baked all of this crap in a long time. You really thought we thought Cohen was a good guy? Come on. We knew he was a slippery fixer. That's who he was. So we've already baked that in. Now, are we happy about this? No. But here's what we think. If Donald Trump would have said during the election, I'm trying to build Trump Tower, which there's nothing wrong with that as long as it's disclosed. There's nothing wrong with that. That's his job. I was shocked when he denied it so vehemently because I'm like, of course he's trying to build one in my backyard. He's trying to build them everywhere. What do you mean? In all of Russia, he doesn't want to put a hotel? Of course he does.
That's what every businessman wants to do. Expand and make more money.
Correct.
And that's one of the reasons we like the guy.
So we knew that. However, him saying, yeah, I've got business dealings in Moscow right now. What would the press say? He's in bed with Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
So if he would have admitted it, they would have made it into exactly what it is today. Not what it actually was, but what it is today. A big scandal. They would have used it against him. So what happens, and let me explain this one more time as simply as I can to the media and to people on the left, people who are Democrats. Look. We don't like this either. We don't like this either. But what is he supposed to do when you have a media that will take anything and everything and turn it into a massive scandal? When the media created this guy. They created him in two ways. Donald Trump, if we trusted the news during the Obama administration, if they were actually telling us what was really going on and did investigations when the government was out of control and when Obama was clearly lying about things like Obamacare. That was a third of our economy. That's the greatest healthcare system the world has ever seen. And he lied. $2,500 back for every family. No, that's not possible. The math shows that's never possible. That you can keep your doctor. No, here is the documented evidence that that will not happen. But you let it slide. Until what, a year after we lost our doctors and we're paying higher prices? Because we didn't trust you at all. We needed somebody like Donald Trump to tell you, shut up. That's not healthy. And you created him in another way. Because you thought he was going to be the easiest candidate to beat, you ran wall-to-wall coverage on him. You took down everyone else in his path, but you just loved him for ratings, and you thought he was going to be the easiest one for Hillary to beat. Well, you were wrong now, weren't you? And you can't live with yourself. You'll never admit to that, but he is your creation. So now you don't like it. Oh, what a surprise. All right, let me talk to you a little bit about Casper Mattress. Switching to a Casper Mattress is really a no-brainer. It's a great sleep. You're going to really love it. And if you don't, I mean, I don't want you to take my word for it. Sleep is very individual. You may hate it. But that's the point. Sleep is very individual. That's why Casper has 100 nights of you trying it out in your own home. They send it to you in this little teeny box that you can carry in. You know, you move a mattress and you're like, guys, can you come on over? We got to move a mattress. It's not that way. They deliver it to you in this little teeny box that you yourself can pick it up. I mean, literally, it's like it's smaller than the old computer monitors when you had an IBM. It's that kind of box. You throw it on the bed. You open it up. Trust me, do not cut the cords on the inside until you have it where you want it to be, because all of a sudden it just flops open and there's this huge mattress. Now, you sleep on it for 100 nights. If you don't love it, and I mean love it, you call them up. They come and pick it up and refund every dime. So don't take my word for it. Don't take their word for it. Casper Mattress. Try it out for yourself. Go to casper.com/Beck. Casper.com. Use the promo code Beck. You get $50 off the purchase of your select mattress. That's casper.com. Promo code Beck. Terms and conditions do apply. So I just wanted to let you know that the Albert wrote to me and he said, Glenn, I bought tickets to your Tampa show. I never in my life have spent so much money to see anyone. Wow. I also don't like crowds. I haven't attended a show of any kind in I don't know how long. My wife and I talked about it and we're going to give you a shot.
Uh-oh.
I expect a great show and nothing less.
Oh, my.
But I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Okay.
All right.
There are metal detectors at the show, right? And maybe, Albert, there may be refunds. Let's be reasonable about this.
It does seem like there could be a little threat inside of that. An implied hostile threat.
Yeah.
No, it's going to be great.
It's
going to be a fun show today. Should we give away a pair of tickets?
Yeah, if you want to go see the show tonight or tomorrow. Tonight in Tampa, tomorrow in Orlando. We'd love to see you. Call us now. The number is 888-727-BECK, 888-727-BECK. Come on out and see us. I tell you, back here in Tampa, it just feels like home. Yeah. I just love Tampa.
I do not
like the humidity here.
It's nice right now. It's cool.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It has something that Texas doesn't have. A beautiful winter. You know, you go to Texas and it's like,
Texas winter.
Is either hot or freezing cold. And usually in the same week, it'll be like 100 and then 4.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time, two parts in the same state. It was 81 and 14.
Yeah, it's great. Well, it's
And the state's
a little big.
Yeah, I know.
The state's a little big.
At the same time. It was 81 degrees in one part and 14 in another.
What's weird is not the same state. It's also the same neighborhood. It's a little nuts. Come and see us if you want tickets to Tampa, Orlando tonight and tomorrow. 888-727-BECK.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.
I got a lot of email in regards to yesterday's program in this hour, and they all pretty much were summed up like this, and they were and mainly from females. This one's from Carly. She said, Glenn, I realize that you receive tons of email every day. I hope this one finds its way to you. I'm just writing to say simply thank you. This morning, Thursday, I was simply doing my normal routine, drinking coffee, checking email, getting ready to tackle a day at work, and listening to your show on my local conservative talk station, KSGF 104.1 out of Springfield. Around 9 o'clock in the morning, you began reading a story about a young woman who found out at an early age that she was unable to have kids. She shared the story about her adoption. Listeners around the world, like me, were able to hear the compassion in your voice as you shared the story. But you said something that stuck with me. You explained how something happens to a woman when she finds out she can't have kids. Thank you for being so real and so transparent for a few minutes and sharing this very real reality. I'm a young, ambitious 23-year-old conservative who can't have children either. She goes in to talk about she's really had a tough few years. She said, but today I'm back to work. I'm back living my new normal life. I'm a survivor who will one day be called mama by a child I adopt. She said, I am a firm believer that Jesus wasn't ready for me to be home yet, and I cannot wait to see what he has planned for my future as an adoptive parent. Thank you for sharing your story. Thanks for being so real. Glenn, I'm proud to be one of your longtime listeners. Carly. Carly, thank you so much. And for all of the women that wrote yesterday, I cannot relate. I have a hard time. I had a hard time during the whole, trying to get pregnant thing. And there is nothing more fun than when you and your wife are trying to get pregnant. Oh,
super romantic.
Oh, my gosh. Come home right now. Yes, dear. It's just super great. It's what, I never thought this would happen to me, so it's hard to understand what happens. But there's a piece of a woman that just seems to, they think that they're not complete, and they.
I think men have a somewhat of an equivalent there with, like, when you lose your functions that you kind of think of yourself that make you a man, right? I mean,
yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, I guess that's you know what? You're right.
There's
you're
a
right.
guttural Boy, sort right of that. Thing that I think happens, that we're like, it's your function. Wait a minute, I can't do it? And it's not a rational way of thinking, of course. Like, it's a...
Oh, I wasn't even thinking that. I was thinking, for instance... Mm-hmm. I've, it's no secret that, I've had some medical issues. I mean, look at me.
Basically are a medical issue.
Yeah,
at this
I know.
Point.
It's like, oh, that's medical issue. What's that? What's his medical issue? Glenn Beck. there are many times that, my wife, has had to get up in the morning to button my shirts or tie my shoes. And she always says, honey, this is no big deal. And it really is to me.
Yeah.
Because you feel like I'm nothing.
Yeah. I remember you telling the story of, I think it was your grandfather who got to a place where he could no longer drive a car.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it ripped him apart.
Yeah.
And he wanted to, and then he wound up driving his lawnmower to town, right?
Yeah. First he drove his truck to Denny's. And then when he was backing out, he went the opposite direction really fast, so he went through the front window of Denny's. So we had to take the keys of the truck away, and then he decided he was going to take the tractor to Denny's. Mm-hmm. And so they had to stop him taking the tractor, so we had to take the keys away from that. And then we caught him literally on the highway on his little riding lawnmower trying to get to Denny's. And he was just like...
First of all, the ultimate commercial for Denny's. Like, yeah, I mean, I like Denny's too. I don't know if I'm going to those lengths.
Yeah.
It's true. Like, you lose those things, and you feel like you're no longer
Well, but you have two ways to go. Let's be honest. May I share a story with you from the news? Okay. Now imagine you're in line at the Dollar General store, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the person in front of you is passing gas, and I don't mean passing gas like, oh boy, you smell something. I mean ripping them.
Okay.
Okay. It's a woman in front of you, and she is just. Okay.
That one.
That
yes.
one. Okay. Okay. Yeah. She's just
We've all had that moment.
We've all
had that moment.
Wait a minute. Okay, I'm done. Okay, so she's just ripping him. And this guy, what would you do? You would expect the person to go, oh my gosh, I am so sorry. But she didn't. And she's like, yeah, okay. And I need one of these. And the guy standing behind her is backing up. You know, there could be a fire. Can we open a door here? And he finally says something because she's just crass about it. And so she turns around. She said, you have a problem with what's happened. And he's like, well, I mean, it is just, I mean, can you at least say excuse me? And she reaches into her purse and she pulls a knife. And she pulls a knife on the guy and he starts to back away. And she said, you say another word and I'm going to gut you. And she threatens to gut the guy. Okay. Now,
rational reaction to the situation.
Sure. Now, the one reason why this caught my eye today is guess which state this story is from?
I mean, I would probably guess the one we're sitting in right now. Florida.
Yes. Yes. This state is the home of the craziest news up until probably 2007. Then all news became like Florida. Mm. But Florida, I think the reason why Florida is so chill is because they watch the news. They've been seeing that stuff go on for a long time.
Yeah.
It's like, that's Florida. So you got a president who's up there. Look, I didn't. Oh, crap. I had a bowl of chili that was fantastic. You know, nobody in Florida is like, oh, yeah. Yeah. I got a neighbor like that.
That is, I think, the way they digest this information.
I think so, too. Now, I don't have the answer to this one, but I do. There is a problem with this story. A woman gets onto a plane with her 5-year-old daughter. And she gets on the plane and the flight attendants make fun of her daughter's name. And then they go an extra step, and this part is way over the line. They post a picture of the boarding pass and a picture of the daughter online, okay? Well, yeah, I don't think that's cool, but they're making fun of her because she told ABC News that her daughter, ABCD, it was not right. I'm sorry, it's ABCDE. It's not right to make fun of her name, A-B-C-D-E.
Is that a pronounceable name, or is it legitimate?
Of course it is. It's Ab-C-D. Ab-C-D.
Ab-C-D.
Ab-C-D.
Mm-hmm.
Ab-C-D. But it is spelled A-B-C-D-E. Okay? So, if I had to ask you what state the parent was from
again?
That would name their kids A, B, C, D, E.
E. Ab-C-D.
Ab-C-D.
Mm-hmm.
But see, that sounds normalish.
Yeah, Ab-C-D, you know, could, I mean, be a name.
Ab-C-D could be a name. This is A, B, C, D, E. Okay? It's the alphabet, in case anybody is not following this closely. If I had to ask you, what state would a parent be most likely to name their kid A, B, C, D, E, what would you say?
I would guess the one we're sitting in right now, Florida.
I would have said Florida or California.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No chance it's any place other than Florida or California. Texas.
Ah, really?
Now, I believe this parent is a transplant.
We need a border wall. We do.
I think this is a case why we need a border wall. Yeah, yeah. The president can build it on the south side. I would like it on the west side of Texas because they're swarming in these Californians. And only a no Texan, no self-respecting Texan would ever name their child A, B, C, D, E. Never. That is an immigrant.
A Texas immigrant? Like they're from another state?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's somebody from California that's like, I kind of like that country of Texas. No. You're going to name your kid after fruit, after space rocks, or any part of the alphabet. I know my name is also part of the alphabet, but it's arranged in a name. You're not allowed in Texas. I want somebody on the staff of the Blaze to take 20 minutes out of their day today. They don't even have to write a story, but I'm the boss. I want to find out if this is a California immigrant. I want to find out.
Hmm.
I suspect she's a white person who's a social justice warrior from California.
I cannot stand white people. I am just, they're just so irritating.
The only person that hates white people more than you is probably the white person that names your child A, B, C, D, E. All right.
Imagine all the problems every time you put your name in for the rest of your life. Again, I know you think it's this cute thing, you're naming your kid this funny thing.
It's not.
Every time they put their name on a form, the person's going to be like, I think you screwed this up. You just put the alphabet. Yeah. No, that's my name.
I mean, I feel bad for Rafe. I feel bad for Rafe because he's always there. I was like, is that Ralph? Is that Raphael? What is Raph? No, it's Rafe. And, you know, it's a common name, I guess, over in England, I guess. It's not here. And I apologize to my son.
Well, I don't think there's an apology needed for a name. I think something
that's the
that
only
you can't
apology
pronounce.
He's ever going to get.
And you're only doing it publicly, never privately.
Yeah, never privately.
No, okay.
He flew in last night with us. We got in late and he's actually in the studio, dead asleep. You can check the Twitter feed. He's dead asleep right now. So this is the only apology he's ever going to get. Son, I apologize to you many, many times. You were just asleep. All right, our sponsor this half hour. What's crypto? What is the crypto world doing right now?
It's about 4,000.
This is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
This is crazy.
I'm getting to the point now where I'm starting thinking, when do I just go back into this? I'm hitting that point.
I did that too.
I haven't done it yet. I mean, I do have some.
If it hits three, I'm going to.
That's your number three?
Yeah.
There's a certain number. I don't know what it is yet. I need to keep thinking about it. But there's some number where I'm like, jeez, this is crazy not to get back
into
this.
Did you see Litecoin? It's like, what is it, $100?
It was. No, it's way less than that. 31.
31 for Litecoin. What's Ethereum at?
112.
Well, that's the one I was thinking, 112. That was like at $1,400.
Yeah. I mean, for a very short time. But still, $500, $600, $700 for a long time.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, it is at that point to where, because here's what's weird. Normally, I would say, done, get out of it. It was a tulip bubble, done. But Goldman Sachs, Chase Manhattan, all of these huge trading firms and financial services, they've spent millions of dollars to prepare for a trading desk for cryptocurrency and Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, the chairman of the New York Stock Exchange just said Bitcoin and digital assets are here to stay.
Okay.
And it's like, if they're here to stay, this might be a good time to... I mean, it's so the head of the New York Stock Exchange.
Right. And they've all built these things. New York Stock Exchange has just built something for Bitcoin use.
On that,
And it hasn't been unveiled yet. And once it's...
First quarter of next year, they're saying.
It has been unveiled, but it hasn't been in use. Right. And the theory is that the rich get richer by talking all of this stuff down And then when it gets really low, that's when they open the floodgates and they've bought all of it at the lowest possible price. I don't know what that low price is, but you're right, Stu.
I'm starting to convince myself.
Yeah. Anyway,
I'm starting to.
I was supposed to tell you something about cryptocurrencies here in this commercial. It's the crypto course. You can get the crypto course where you can find out everything you need to know about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, and more importantly, blockchain, because that's going to play a very big role in the future. Call 877-PBL-BECK, 877-PBL-BECK, or just go to smartcryptocourse.com. Take this course. You'll learn a lot. Smartcryptocourse.com. There's a couple of things coming. By the way, Bill O'Reilly is going to be joining us in just a few minutes. You do not want to miss Bill O'Reilly. He's got a lot on his mind today as well to share. Also, 217 migrants have been found dead on the Texas border area in ranches in 2018. They just found another person dead on the ranch. I mean, these people who live on the border, it's, you know, if you're living in New York and you're like, I don't understand, you know, okay, I mean, so you got some immigrants coming. You don't know what it's like living on the border. Some of these ranchers, I don't know. We had somebody that tried to give us a huge ranch in Texas. Just give it to us. And we were like, oh, my gosh, that's amazing. But when we realized, no, that they were trying to give it to us because they couldn't offload it and it had all kinds of issues. You know, if you're owning it, you have all kinds of issues. They could not. It was like a family ranch that they could never go to anymore because it was too dangerous. It's like, no, thank you. No, thank you. You have no concept unless you live in a border state.
Glenn Beck.
Centers for Disease Control. Preventive and prevention. Because you want to control the disease and prevent the disease. They released a new report yesterday. CDC says 70,000 Americans died from drug overdoses in 2017, an all-time high, higher than the peak number of car crashes of deaths in 1972, the higher than the peak number of HIV deaths in 1995, higher than the peak of deaths from guns in 1993. Opioid deaths. One of the chief causes of these insane numbers is the sharp spike in deaths related to synthetic opioids called fentanyl. In 2013, the U.S. had 3,000 fentanyl overdose deaths. Last year, 28,000. That is a 45% increase of fentanyl deaths in 1 year. If you don't know what fentanyl is, if they ever try to give you fentanyl, don't do it. I mean, it is an end of life drug. And so if you are at the end of life, go ahead, take it.
This is your medical advice?
It is my medical advice.
Okay, I have to make sure, because you are a doctor.
Yeah, I am a doctor.
Yeah,
yeah, a doctor of humanities. I can diagnose anything in the human body. So anyway, but seriously, I've had it. I didn't know that because I was in surgery. I woke up on the table. They couldn't keep me out. They couldn't keep me out of pain. They gave me fentanyl and another cocktail on top of that. Oh, my gosh. I had it for like 3 or 4 days, and I was addicted to it already. It's horrendous. It's wonderful, but it is horrendous. It's made for end-of-life use only, because they know once you start taking it, you're not going to stop. The steep rise in the drug overdose deaths has reduced our life expectancy rate for the third year in a row. That hasn't happened since World War II. Now the leading death for adults under 55 is drug overdose. Federal crackdowns recent years have focused on the opioid prescription, and those are down overall. Yet overdose deaths keep rising, mainly because of fentanyl, synthetic opioids. They're deadly because literally it says on the box, if you buy a real doctor prescribed, says on the box, do not touch their patches. Do not touch the patch. If it wasn't prescribed for you, it may kill you just touching it. Unfortunately, there was also another CDC report released yesterday, this one about suicide rates, which rose 3.7% last year. Rural America saw the largest increase in suicides. Since 99, the suicide rates for males and females has increased every single year, but the rate remains highest for men. Does anybody care? Gee, I wonder why. Men are worthless. Men are bigots. Men are haters. Men are misogynists. Men have no value. Let's focus all on women. Let's focus on girls, never the boys. Gee, I wonder what that could mean. Calling this the opioid epidemic is not hyperbole. With the numbers as high as they are, you probably know somebody who is affected by this. You have to ask yourself what's happening to us. Our economy is booming. Unemployment is at low, yet there is so much despair in this country. America is hurting right now, and politics can't ultimately do anything about it. But we can. You can, right where you are. It might not seem like a lot in the big picture, but it is everything. It is everything, especially to that one person that you can affect right now.
It's Friday, November 30th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program. It's Friday.
Let me go to Bill O'Reilly. Hello, Bill. I wanted to start with this because I know that your column is about another epidemic that you say nobody's really paying attention to.
Yeah, and there's a correlation to the rise of drug addiction in the hard drug arena to the massive amount of internet addiction we're seeing not only in the United States but the world. There's a correlation to it. It's a very complicated issue, as you know, Beck. By the way, I appreciate you guys labeling me Father Christmas because, as
well,
you know,
so
I saved Christmas for the United States of America.
Yes, maybe I know you did. And you've got rosy cheeks and it's,
yes,
you just look
no
like
spin
Father.
Elves on BillO'Reilly.com working
right,
around the
that's
clock.
Right. That's
I got
right.
It
all right.
But now back to addiction. So it's a very complicated situation because you are dealing with individuals who make a decision. And the decision is, I'm going to take hard drugs for recreational purposes. You know, there are people who get addicted because of medical reasons, but not that many. All right. And I'm going to do it despite knowing I might die and I might become addicted and destroy my family. But I'm going to do it anyway. So you're starting with a person who's troubled, because rational people, they don't make that decision. And therefore, all of this pie in the sky about, well, all we need is more money for rehab and the government's fault because they don't provide whatever to these people. I mean, it's just a lie. The second thing is the society itself, with the legalization of marijuana and the basic glorification of drug use in the media, in Hollywood, sends a message to young and mature people that, you know what, it's cool. It's cool. Look at Snoop Dogg. Look, it's cool to do it. All right. And, you know, getting intoxicated when you're 14, that's a good thing. You go right ahead and do it. Okay. So you have that massive wave of, oh, inebriation is good. And if you do it, you'll be accepted and you'll be one of the cool kids. It's absolutely happening everywhere. All right. So this is like a wave that comes in. And the final piece to it is, and we're looking at it now, well, if you're a seller of fentanyl, you know, it's a nonviolent crime. Yeah, you might be handing people poison and they might die. But nah, it's not that bad. You shouldn't really be spending a lot of time in prison. We need to rehab you. So all of this is why the CDC comes out with this, you know, and by the way, more people died last year of drug overdoses than in the entire Vietnam War, by a lot. So there you go. There's the analysis across the board. It's pretty bleak.
Well, but there's also something else that you talk about, and that is the addiction to devices and the internet.
Yeah.
And now there is this actual term. What did you say it was? I heard about it just a couple of days ago, and then I read it in your column.
It's internet it's a disorder. Addiction.
Yeah.
Disorder. Disorder. So now there are rehab clinics, of course. Capitalism. You're going to have for kids. Mostly kids, ages 11, if you can imagine, to 23, 24, and it costs a fortune because insurance is not going to handle it, to go there and to try to, you know, pry their iPhones out of their hands. But well, every parent and grandparent knows about the addiction, and there are plenty of adults addicted to it, too. They don't pay attention to their kids. They don't pay attention to their pets. I mean, nobody talks about that, but pets used to be, you know, brought in and you pay attention to them and you walk them and you nurture them. And now the pet's looking at it, how come nobody's paying attention to me? Because everybody's texting or Snapchatting.
No, that's why.
I
got my dog an iPhone and an Instagram page.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good move. Very good, Beck.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's go into politics. Let's talk a little bit about Cohen and what happened yesterday, what you think it actually means, and then what you think it politically means.
Okay. I don't know what it means, and no one else does either. Therefore, all the pundits who are telling you on television and in the newspaper op-ed pages that they do know are lying, Beck.
Okay, all right? Well, wait a minute. Hang on. Let's just go over what we do know. He came out and said
that
this is Cohen. He came out and he said
I lied to some congresspeople under oath about a Russian condominium project.
Okay. Now, he is already, you know, not a credible person. He's never been credible in my book.
Right.
However, he made that claim. Then Trump, who has been saying the whole time, 14 times since he's been president, that we've had no business dealings at all over in Russia. Yesterday, he came out and he said he's weak and pathetic. Don't believe it. Then he came out later and said, yes. OK, so I was trying to. Of course, I was. I'm a businessman. I was trying to build the Trump Tower. But there's nothing wrong with that, which is true. With an exception of the denials, but not under oath. We do understand, we think, this coming from Rudy Giuliani, that the president answered honestly to in his deposition. So there's no, if Giuliani is telling the truth, there is no perjury trap here for him. So there doesn't look like there's anything, that there was any laws broken. It's just about Trump lying about it.
But he didn't lie about it because he said quite clearly, I don't have any business with Russia. This was all pie in the sky. Maybe we could do it.
Oh,
might
Bill,
happen.
Don't cut that one. Are you really cutting that line?
I'm telling you in a court of law.
No, I'm not talking about court of law. I'm not talking about court of law because we don't, as far as I'm concerned.
And Trump and his lawyers can say, as they have said, we didn't have any business dealings with Russia.
Correct. I'm not talking about the law because I don't think there's any laws broken here. I don't think there's any laws broken.
He's going to say, Beck, and you can disagree with it and disparage him if you want to, but he's going to say, I didn't have any business dealings with him. A conversation about maybe someday we'll build a condo in Moscow is not a business dealing.
He did sign a letter of intent.
He can say that,
He signed a letter of intent. I mean, his intent was to do business,
where
he formally engaged them.
Who?
The letters, I mean, obviously, you know, it's been reported on. If it comes out,
yeah, I haven't seen any letter, and until I see the letter, I don't believe it.
Okay. So if there is a letter,
and he did sign it,
does it matter?
Yeah, that would matter. Because if there's a letter of intent to build a condominium in Moscow, that's a business dealing. So that would matter.
Okay, so even if he, because see, this is interesting, because I buy into the letter, and I don't think that anybody's, I don't think it's going to
come from.
Seen it in several places. October 28th, 2015 was the date. It was the date of the third Republican presidential debate. And I think this is an interesting one, Bill, because it's one of those things everyone can throw out these accusations. All this right. one, it should be provable. But if they have the letter, they should be able to show it, right?
Yeah.
If they have the letter,
yeah,
it should be in the Mueller report when it comes out.
It would have been leaked time ago. If Cohen had a letter, and Cohen would be the guy.
Mm-hmm. But he just yesterday came out and said, okay, yes, I did lie about this two cars.
So here's the thing. I don't really care. I get to the point on this when the facts are out, then we'll be able to comment on it.
Yeah.
I'm not holding the letter out as, because I'm not talking about, I'm only talking about politics here.
Don't use the word lie and fall into the trap of all of the hate Trump media. Look, listen to Father Christmas. It's the season of joy.
Sit on a throne of lies.
The man lied, don't use the word.
Well, this would be proof then. You are saying it would be proof if this letter existed and he signed it.
If you have a letter of intent to build a condominium in Moscow, that is a business dealing.
Okay, so what does that mean then? If that did exist to you,
about what his contacts with Russia were.
So then what? I got it. So then what would that actually mean? Because it's not illegal.
No.
So is anybody, is this going to change anything?
Well, unless
I don't think
he said that under oath in his deposition.
Right.
Right.
And then it would.
And no.
If it didn't, it would just be another thing that the anti-Trump people could say, the guy's not trustworthy. That's all.
Right. Okay. So now let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Because if you, Sue and I were talking about this earlier, if you listen to what the president says, so you have a good chance at one point or another during your day of getting pissed off. Okay. But if you don't listen to what he says, you just watch his actions, like on Russia. He's very strong against Russia. He has taken real sanctions to Russia that we have not seen before. When you watch his actions, they don't match the words, because he's a guy like, this is the most beautiful sink ever built. And you're like, okay, it's a sink, man. You wash your hands in it. so you have to not look at his language, but when you actually listen to him, you have to defend it. And we're put into a role to where we have to somehow or another say it's okay that he said I had nothing to do with paying those girls off, and we know now that he did. If this happens with Russia, and there's a couple of other things that are like this, that
you have to make a decision whether his policies override his personal behavior. It's the same thing with Bill Clinton.
And I think the American people,
the same thing with Clinton,
with Bill Clinton,
as the Republicans are doing with Trump.
Right. And I think everybody has already made their decision on that. Right.
I'm not sure, because if Trump needs, if he wants to be reelected, he's got to win over about 7% more votes than he has now in the polls.
All right,
and
so
there are persuadable people, depending on who runs against him.
All right, so let's pick it up there, and our conversation continues with Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. We are so pleased to be at WFLA in Tampa. Tonight we're in Tampa. Tomorrow we're in Orlando, Florida. We would love to see you. Tickets are available. You just grab them online at glenbeck.com/tour. I am not leaving this city without Kojax.
I am the barbecue place, yeah.
Leaving this city without the house.
of ribs.
Of ribs.
This was your favorite place.
Oh my gosh, I love this place. I wanted to move into the House of Ribs. It is so good.
Before we get back into the politics, can I ask Bill O'Reilly a question?
Yeah.
Bill, are you aware what happened with your Gettysburg Address bid the other day?
No, I'm not. I was waiting. What happened?
Patiently. Yeah, yeah.
Because you bid $20,000 for a copy of the Gettysburg Address.
Yeah.
And then there was an auction at the charity event, and it went back and forth, and you were outbid.
Right away. Pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly, unfortunately, pretty quickly. For you. I would like to tell you that the person who outbid you was this a blonde woman who was up in the front row. She seemed very nice. Her name was Tanya Beck.
You were beaten by my wife, Bill. By my wife.
Well, it's bidding on now, his own things.
What charity does it go to benefit?
That particular piece went to do the Abraham Lincoln Museum. But the entire event was my charity, Mercury One, which is...
Right. Well, if I had to lose to somebody, Tanya is a person that I would want to lose to. She's so such a nice woman.
She is.
Well,
I don't know why she's with Glenn, but you're right.
Then it was me that you lost
Glenn,
to. Then it was me.
Beck. Mercury.
Florida, where we are performing tonight in concert. I believe, Stu, you're going to try the cello tonight, are you not?
Yeah, I've never tried it before, but I think it looks pretty easy. I mean, your arm goes back and forth. It's basically the whole thing.
So. And I am on the electric guitar and electric piano, which I've never played either one of them.
And there's no electricity either. So it's
It's unplugged.
Yeah,
it's unplugged. So anyway, that's tonight and tomorrow. Tonight in Tampa, tomorrow in Orlando, glenbeck.com/tour. Bill O'Reilly is with us. Bill.
Wow, you know, I wish I was down there. I would really like to see Stu play the cello. That would be exciting.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it. A lot of people feel the same way.
Yeah.
I know.
So,
if you get the steel drum going, I mean, hey, can Father Christmas just get a quick plug in so we don't have to do it at the end?
Yeah, sure.
All right. The internet addiction is killing the book industry, all right, because people don't want to take the time to read a 300-page book when they can just text their brains out or Snapchat or whatever they're doing. If you look at the Amazon 100, top 100 books, there are actually 10 books, 10 in the top 100, real books. Killing the SS is actually the second best-selling book next to Michelle Oh in the country right now. It was first last Sunday. But The Wonky Donkey and Dragons Love Tacos are outselling me on Amazon, Beck. And it's an outrage.
Oh, Dragons Love Tacos sounds really good.
Dragons Love Tacos. I love tacos. We have a lot in common. I got a lot to
love tacos, all right? So the whole
book
is
fraud. How do you know that?
You were the one saying, unless you have a confirmation of a lie, don't call it a lie.
Don't call it a lie.
How do you know dragons don't love tacos?
They don't love tacos.
How do you know that?
Dragons eat people. They don't eat. They don't. Don't eat tacos. But anyway, killing the SS.
That's an old charge on dragons.
Anybody who likes history will love killing the SS for the holiday thing. And then BillO'Reilly.com premium membership spec. You have one. Everyone should have one. So that's it. Father Christmas is done. Go right ahead.
All right, so let's talk about the G20 meeting.
The president said
yesterday, which, you know, I love the way he negotiates. He's got a twitchy eye, and everybody's like, I don't know, he just might frickin' do it. He said, I don't really even know if I want to make a deal with China, because we're getting so much money from them now in this tariff war. but you know he does. But he is threatening all kinds of stuff. What do you think is going to happen with the G20? Any progress on the trade with China?
I think there will be a breakthrough because China, and I have this on very good authority, is going to slap a tariff on Dragons Love Tacos. You're not going to be able to ship that book to China. And that's going to be the deal breaker. And Trump will give in. And then everything will be good. I have heard that this deal with China has already been made. And this is usually the way they do it. People should know this. They don't just show up to Buenos Aires, all right, and then they talk in a room and come out with a deal. That never happens. It's always
done before. Did with Gorbachev and Reagan.
by minions, yeah, or the Secretary of State or whatever, and then they have a framework. So they know now whether they're going to have a joint announcement on Saturday or Sunday, which I believe they'll have some kind of breakthrough. I do believe that will happen.
So will the trade war, because this is the one, this is the one thing that I know President Trump really believes in. He believes that trade wars are good. He believes that tariffs are good. And a lot of people in his administration have been hoping that he's just using this as a negotiation tactic. So far,
that's
with Canada and Mexico. No, well, he got his deal with Mexico and then he never changed the tariff. So
Huh? He will. His Obrador's coming in this weekend, and they will do that. But Trump is smart. He's not going to do it until Obrador gets in, the new president of Mexico. And he sees how he's going to handle a caravan. He sees how he's going to do a whole bunch of other things. So it's but it'll
When it comes to Mexico, I'm not in any hurry to lift it on Mexico because of the caravan. I want to see what they're doing.
Right. Because this guy's a socialist, Obrador, and you got to see how crazy he's going to be.
All right. So you think that he's going, we are going to solve this deal with China?
I don't know if you're going to solve it, but Trump is a deal maker. That's his whole life, makes deals. All right. And so he wants to put forth to the American people that he's tougher, smarter, and stronger than China. That's what he wants to do. Now, China, they're basically saying, we're not going to take a lot of garbage from Donald Trump, but our economy is listing. Word of the day, Stu, listing, listing. All right. And it is. So we're going to have to do something to get investment back into China. That's what China wants. So both sides have big gains to be made if they can, you know, be nice to each other. And that's what I think will happen.
Let's talk about Putin. Yesterday, President arrived. He was going to meet with Putin. Then he said, no, I've got to look at, I'm not happy that they haven't released the Ukrainian sailors yet. So what do you think is going to happen with Putin? And
no idea. You never know with Putin. Putin's a different character than, you know, China. China has to deal with the United States. They have to, because their economy is so fragile. It's 1.5 billion people, many of whom don't have electricity. They don't have a lot of choice. Putin can do whatever he wants. I mean, Putin's like Stalin in the sense that he runs that place. You don't like it, I'll put a bullet in your head. And so Putin, you can't predict what he's going to do. I think he's just bored over there. It's 14 below zero every day in Moscow. He goes, let's have a little fun with Ukraine. We'll take one of their boats. You know, that's what he is. He's a provocateur. So Trump can't handle him because Trump's got nothing over him. And Trump was smart not to meet with him. And, you know, if Trump had his way, he wouldn't meet with anybody. He wouldn't even go there. He doesn't even know where it is. I mean, come on.
Last topic, the border. Your thoughts over the week.
Well, we've done some excellent reporting on BillO'Reilly.com, tracing the big money that's come from Washington to Chicago to Tegucigalpa, Honduras, to fund this whole ruse, R-U-S-E.
And you know, we don't ever look those
up. This is a very well orchestrated, organized, and funded campaign to break the U.S. asylum system, break it down, break the border, have open borders. And if you go to BillO'Reilly.com, we've listed all the agencies, all the people running the agencies. Gee, George Soros, oh, wow, in the past, has get a lot of money to these organizations. So. Yep. That's what this is. You don't have 6,000 people in Mexico City get on buses and drive to Tijuana unless you have millions of dollars to charter those buses. So it's all ruse. But the real thing is, why on earth does the U.S. media ignore the real story here? You know, I mean, what do you idiots in BlackRock and Manhattan want? Open borders? Is that what you want in Hollywood? Is that what you really want? Because that's what you're playing into. I mean, these are. I'm now thinking that the people running the media agencies, Beck, you know, with the exceptions of you and me, are just stone cold stupid people.
Oh,
you know,
I
know they're corrupt, but now I'm thinking you guys are just stupid. This is so horrible for the country. The perspective of open borders and chaos on our border with Mexico. The narcotics that you talked about at the beginning of the hour. Coming across that, where do you think the fentanyl is coming from? Mexico.
Okay, so, Bill,
it's annoying me. It's annoying me, Stu.
So I think spell it out so we can look it up. Bill, I agree with you that they are they're just blind, and maybe blind stupid on several things. But when you. I think that the press has, you know, done what Fonzie did, in 1976, and jumped the shark. I think that they have, they've now entered a rule into a room where they are literally asking us to deny what our eyes can see, and also deny to look at what was happening.
The crusher was for the press. That they showed these pictures of the tear gas with the kids and the mothers, right? And they went wild, did they not?
Yes.
And then, all of a sudden, the next day, well, President Obama used tear gas 500 times on the border during his 8 years.
No, 1,600. 1,600.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's
okay.
1,600.
So did you hear a word of that?
No.
A word of it in the New York Times, Washington Post, you know, and so you're right. Americans go, you know what? We're not believing anything you say now because you don't deserve to be believed. And that helps Mercury, Glenn Beck, Bill O'Reilly, BillO'Reilly.com, because people go, you know what? We're going to look for something that we can at least have a semblance of trust in, not you. I know.
Bill O'Reilly.
Brilliant, that analysis.
I know, it was speechless. No, it was beautiful.
Speechless. Always leads to speechlessness.
It's really, it's quite amazing, your performance.
You. Thank you.
Every
I want everybody to go see Beck and Stu tonight playing a cello. It's going to be just a blast. I want everybody
I've written a song
Florida.
About you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
He's written a song about you.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Bill, great to have you. BillO'Reilly.com and Killing the SS is his latest best-selling book, which is really, truly tremendous if you're a history lover or you really just want to delve in and know the truth about some of the things that even the United States did in World War II with Killing the SS. Bill O'Reilly's book is tremendous. Thanks so much, Bill. Talk to you soon.
Okay, guys. See you soon.
All right.
Bye.
I don't know why I like him.
It's a very broad statement and question, but an interesting one.
Our sponsor this half hour is FilterBuy. Is our mic on when I said that? FilterBuy is our sponsor. You know, when you have to turn on, if you live in a place, I don't know if Seattle is still like this. Do people in Seattle have air conditioning? Because when I grew up, we didn't have air conditioning. And it's not like, we didn't have air conditioning. I wanted it, but nobody had it because you're like, what a waste of money. What do you air condition 4 days out of the year? But when you turn your heat on now your heat is circulating. Can you smell it? Can you smell it? Your heater, your air conditioning unit, you have air filters. And I was in a house the other day, because we're moving, and I was looking at a rental house, because I just sold my house, and so we're moving into a rental house because we're going to build a house. And I walk in, and there is this air vent that is just covered in black. You could see through the grain, just like so dirty. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And the filter had to have been just nasty, worse than mine. And I don't ever change my filter until I got with FilterBuy. FilterBuy, they'll ship your order within 24 hours. Here's the thing. You save 5% if you just, you know, click, you know, renewal. And so they'll send you, like, every 6 months, they'll send you a new filter. So it arrives at your door and you're like, oh, time to change the filter again. Because I never think about it. I forget. And I'm not going to Home Depot on my Saturday to go get filters.
Yes, you are. You got a lot of stuff to do.
Take that one off the list. They'll send it to you just at filterbuy.com. That's filterbuy.com. I got to tell you, I love this priest. Priest who has been an exorcist for 40 years has come out and said that Celine Dion's new gender-neutral clothing line is satanic, inspired by Satan himself. He said, aside from the clothing being hideously ugly. Oh, how many Hail Marys do I have for laughing at this? Aside from the clothing being hideously ugly, occult themes on children is disturbing. Babies who look sullen, who would pay $77 for a baby blanket with skulls on it? Anyway, it's satanic. And I say we should have known that with her music, that anything really comes from her has been inspired by the devil.
It's a strong stance there.
Well, it is Celine Dion, and my heart will not go on another second longer.
Ugh. She's still doing that Vegas thing? That's the new thing. If you were like a big artist and now you could just go to Vegas and have a residency and just do those shows every day. That's got to be the best life in the world.
Yeah. I'm trying to get that gig, but it, like the Vegas deli.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
You know.
It's got like 12 seats.
Yeah.
Three tables.
But it's sold out.
Sold out.
Well, almost.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Usually people are eating and not necessarily paying attention to your show. But
they're like, shut up. Who is this guy? Can you get him to shut up? I don't know if she's still doing it, but boy, I hope she is, because I just, you know.
Yeah, but that you didn't seem to really express a.
Yeah. Mm. So we have Ambassador Brownback on. Coming up in just a second. He was the governor of
Kansas and senator from Kansas as well, right?
Thank you, Stu. And now he is the ambassador at large for the International Religious Freedom, sworn in as ambassador at large. I don't know what that means. Is that a fat joke?
I don't think
Sam is fat.
No, he's not. So
I don't know what it means. I just know this, that we wanted to talk to him about religious freedom, but because he's in the role he's in, he can't talk about a couple of the stories that we were talking about this week. So I don't want to put him in an awkward position. So if you're listening, you're like, why aren't you talking to him about this issue and that issue? Because I can't put him in an awkward position because he's an ambassador at the time. But we do want to talk to him about religious persecution and religious freedom around the world. Senator or Ambassador Brownback,
Glenn,
coming up next.
Beck, Mercury.
Hey, it's Glenn, and I want to tell you about something that you should either end your day with or start your morning with, and that is The News and Why It Matters. If you like this show, you're going to love The News and Why It Matters. It's a bunch of us that all get together at the end of the day and just talk about the stories that matter to you and your life. The News and Why It Matters. Look for it now wherever you download your favorite podcast.
Glenn Beck.
20th anniversary of the International Religious Freedom Act. 20 years this has been in, and I'm not sure that religious freedom is getting better at all. We have the ambassador at large, Sam Brownback. He was a senator and governor of Kansas, and now the ambassador at large, which I think means he's either on the lam or they don't give him a cool, you know, residence to live in. I'm not really sure.
Let's ask him. That's an important first question.
It really is. Yeah. Ambassador Brownback, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you guys today?
Very good. I'm sure that at large means that you're not on the lam, right?
That's correct. It means you cover the whole world. It's
okay.
Like the at large. It's not religious freedom for a particular country, Bulgaria,
right,
or Iran or something like that. It covers the entire world. So, you know, we work on the issues around the world. I'm stationed out of the State Department, but I do a lot of traveling to different countries and work around the administration on religious freedom topics that Yeah, you're right. The situation has gotten worse over the last 20 years. But this administration's serious about what we can do to change that trend line, get it going back the right way.
Now, I know you're a ambassador, so if we ask anything that we shouldn't be asking, we want people to be free, and I don't care about the interview or anything else. I just want people to be free. So feel free to say shut up, Glenn, at any time. But can we talk a little bit about the Middle East and start with the Middle East on what's happening there? Mercury One has done a remarkable job on bringing thousands of Christians out of the Middle East, and the lion's share really now at this point has gone to Australia. And these are good Christians who were marked for death in the Middle East. We've got one, not family, one person into America. How come America is not embracing the persecuted Christians like some other countries around the world?
Well, we historically have. You can look at a number of people that have fled the Middle East, particularly religious minorities, over the last 30 years, and a number have come to the United States. And I don't know why the recent situation has changed where they're not coming into the United States, because we've always been a haven for religious minorities. One of the new things that we're trying to do more is, though, to make the situation safer in the Middle East for religious minorities to stay. And that's the
well. I know that's what a lot of them. Yeah, a lot of them want to. So, what are we doing to secure that?
Northern Iraq is probably the best example, where a number of them are moving back. I toured there 1st of July. We're rebuilding homes, rebuilding churches, institutions, hospitals. And the key long term is to get a better security environment so that people don't feel threatened. But they are moving back, and now we're starting to focus on that security agenda to be able to tell people that, you know, yes, you can leave. You can seek asylum status in other places, and people grant it. But we really need you to stay. We don't want to see these historic religions, particularly Christianity, but also the Yazidis in that region, continue to get pushed out of the Middle East like they have for the past 30 years.
Well, I tell you, they most of them have reluctantly left. The ones that we deal with, they don't want to leave because they all say the same thing. If we leave, we are the original people that you read about in the Bible, the ones that were persecuted, the ones that the apostles first went to talk to. That's us. And if we leave, it leaves a vacuum. And so they don't want to leave, most of them.
I agree. And that's why I was happy to hear that a number of them are moving back now into these communities. I had some meetings every week at Tuesday from 11 to noon, Washington, D.C., usually on the Hill. We do a religious freedom roundtable with outside groups and a number of outside individuals then that have been persecuted or represent persecuted communities come in and tell their story. And recently I was at one of those where people said, no, our community, Northern Iraq, about 55% have moved back now to the community. The homes have been rebuilt. The churches have been rebuilt. And they're happy to be able to move back home, but the security situation is still tenuous. At any time, a new ISIS-type variety could build up. And so, you know, they kind of sleep with a bag packed, ready to flee to Erbil or somewhere else in the region where they can get to near-term safety. But that's the situation we've got to correct, where they don't have to sleep with a bag packed to leave at a moment's notice.
So, the Saudi Arabia situation with Khashoggi was an absolute nightmare. And, you know, they're not the friendliest place to visit, especially if you're a Christian and open about it. However, I have heard that things are dramatically changing there. And, you know, there are some areas in the Middle East that are even now openly embracing Israel. Are you sensing something happening in the Middle East more than just an opposition to Iran?
No, I am. I'm headed to the UAE, United Arab Emirates, next week, speaking to a major, mostly Muslim leadership conference. I'm going to talk about ending violence between the Abrahamic faiths, and talk about that what we need to do is have a respect for each other. And that these are different faiths. They have different beliefs. There's no question about it. But people, we should have a respect for that. And that there should not be, and that the theologians should say that our religion does not support the use of violence in the promotion, the propagation of the faith, that to renounce that use of violence.
Now, that seems... that seems just like something that people are going to say, and they don't really mean it because that's the way it has been. But I have again heard that in Saudi Arabia, they are now arresting and closing down many of the extremist mosques, the Wahhabist clerics, that they're 1,500 to 3,000 that have lost their mosque and have been stopped because of their view. Is that true? Do you know?
I can't verify that particular thing, but I can tell you that things are changing. Just that you are seeing a leadership at the governmental level in these countries that is more open, respectful, and then seeing too, Glenn, that when you decide as a nation, we are only going to have one faith, and we're only going to have one interpretation of that one faith in our country, and all else are not welcome, and they can easily be vandalized, terrorized, killed. You limit the growth of your own country.
Yeah.
You limit your potential, and you actually increase extremism and terrorism, and you almost authorize mob violence by doing that. A number of the governments in the region are seeing this is a bad strategy for us long term. We can't grow based on this strategy. We have to be open and let the faiths compete in a environment that protects all faiths being able to practice as they see fit, as long as they're peaceful.
So I'm sure you've seen what's been happening on our borders. And it has been a little agonizing to many people to hear the refugee word thrown around so much and asylum thrown around for people that many of them are on record stating that they are here because they can't find a job or they want to finish their education in America, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sure there are qualified people that need asylum, that are headed towards our border, but it's in the vast minority, I'm guessing. And it seems like we've lost touch with what a refugee really is. When the United States opens its arms to say, we will provide shelter for you, it is for something vastly different than what we're seeing on the border. Can you define what persecution looks like? What a refugee or someone who needs asylum looks like in your world of religious freedom?
Well, I mean, there are legal definitions, and there are courts that make these determinations, and we have hundreds of thousands, probably, of people in the United States currently seeking asylum status. And I pulled that number out of the air, so I'm not certain. Mm-hmm. But I'm certain it's thousands that are seeking, and courts make that determination. But generally, the situation that has to prevail is that they were from or in a country where, in their set of beliefs, they could not function. They were subject to terrorism, to arrest, that they were not allowed to go to school or to practice their freedom freely, so that they had this level of systematic persecution that was taking place at the hands of the government, or that they had no protection provided by the government, and this was allowed to take place against them. those are the sort of factual situations that you're looking for on an asylum status, which can often be pretty hard to actually achieve to meet the factual setting that we require to grant somebody a legal asylum status.
Is the increase of religious persecution, is it a factor of the governments of the world getting worse, or is it a factor that the churches have pretty much fallen asleep at the switch?
You know, I ask this question of experts all the time, because it seemed like to me that we had a burst of religious freedom after the fall of communism.
Yes.
That those nations opened up. There was a freedom that happened that they hadn't breathed for a long period of time. It was more exclusive to there, but there was a nice push of it around the world. And then that things have been constricting since that period of time. And I was talking with an expert about that earlier this week, and he said, you know, it's a series of factors. It's government seeing religion and its importance and its impact, and then dabbling in it, in some cases funding it. But if you fund something by government, government's tentacles go into you, and they tend towards control of a means. In other cases, it's a political move by government where a majority faith-oriented people don't like a new minority faith that's coming in, and they want them kicked out, limited, and they'll pursue laws that that do that. There's any number of factors, but it's probably really reflective, as much as anything, of the growing importance of religion at a time when much of the world thought religion would be in decline. The impact and the importance of religion is growing around the world, and governments are active around that space, more active.
So let me ask you this, and it kind of goes to what you just said. As I travel the world and I am with persecuted people and persecuted for their religion, I am struck by how shallow my faith really is. It is remarkable for the country that is known to be one of the most religious, at least in Christianity, how shallow our faith is overall compared to those countries where Christianity is being persecuted. Those people, their faith is remarkably different. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I'm around people weekly whose faith astounds me. This beautiful faith, and there's a calm peace and joy about them that you're looking. This you can't make that up. I was on the phone with Andrew Brunson, and we worked his case. The president got him out. The president leaned in and got that done. But that man, Andrew Brunson, has a remarkable calm and peaceful faith, and he spent 2 years in a Turkish prison and had great difficulty and lots of spiritual failures, but towards the end getting successes. And you're just going, yeah, you just see the purified faith there, and that's what I get to see regularly, and people speaking clearly about miracles and signs and things that they've seen personally that have caused them to make this bold proclamation of their faith. It's a gorgeous thing.
Ambassador Sam Brownback, you were a great governor, a great senator, and thank you for all of your hard work through the years, and thank you so much for your work as the ambassador of international religious freedom. Thank you, Sam. Appreciate it.
My honor. Take care. Thanks, Glenn. God bless you all.
God bless. All right, our sponsor this half hour is CarShield.
I'm in the middle of a CarShield experience right now.
Are you nervous?
Yes, my car is in the shop, and they said they have some problem with it, and I don't know, I don't even remember what it was. And they asked if I had any warranties. Now, my car is well past the manufacturer warranty.
Which car is it?
My black car. And I said, you know what?
Black car.
I actually do. I've got CarShield, so what? I don't want to deal with it. You deal with them, and I don't have to deal with it.
It is It is so amazing. You start to think when you're doing, because I have the same thing with my truck. I brought it in. I don't even really care. It's horrible. It's horrible. But you go from, oh dear God, what? You found what? No, 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 no. To, yeah, I got Car Shield. Uh-huh. Yeah. You can stop talking to me. Just call them.
Yeah, just call them. I don't want to deal with it. Just do whatever
you have
to do.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It is Car Shield. And, you know, there's, you know, some deductibles that may apply, et cetera, et cetera. But it will take a huge load off of your mind. If you have a car, 5,000 miles, 150,000 miles, doesn't matter. You call Car Shield. If your warranties are all out, get covered now with the ultimate in coverage for your car for all kinds of repairs. I mean, a sensor is $1,000 now. Right now, you can get carshield.com coverage right now at 800-CAR-6100. 800-CAR-6100. If you use the promo code Beck, you're going to save 10%. That's carshield.com, promo code Beck, carshield.com, promo code Beck, or 800-CAR-6100. Mention the promo code Beck. Deductible may apply. We're so thrilled to be at WFLA. If you have anybody wants to blame anybody for my career, it would be WFLA.
Mm-hmm,
and
thank you.
And the program director here at the time was Sue Trikas, who
awesome.
Is going to see her. She's still here at WFLA. And
I love this place.
I do, too.
Just walking down the halls, it brings back so many memories.
It's
crazy. So this is the place
memories.
It started. I mean, you know, this is the mothership of the whole network. And
I just walked by the studio where you and I had a conversation. And I said, I'm telling you, it's going to happen. And you were like, Glenn, you've been saying that forever from the first day show that we were going to replace Dr. Laura. And like 3 weeks, remember this? Like 3 or 4 weeks later, we get a call from Premier. And they're like, we want you for that 9 to noon live thing.
I'm just as much a fan of these stories as well, because it's like I'm seeing a new movie. You know, it's like you're in theaters and here's a whole new brand new story that you've never heard before. Just like the audience is here.
Oh, you like to forget them. You like to forget.
I mean, I don't know what you're talking about as usual, but I do remember. I mean, this was a great time. It was a lot of fun. You know,
it was a great
really
time.
Exciting, and the people here are awesome. I mean, every time we come back here, I love it. I love this town. I really do. Tampa's just great. It's a great place. You're very excited about the barbecue, which is weird coming from Texas. You're going from Texas to Tampa for barbecue?
I'm sorry, but I think the best barbecue ever is here at Kojak's.
They're going to wall you out of the state of Texas.
I know. They get so picky. Mm-hmm. Every barbecue in every part is different, though.
Yeah.
It's just different.
They're different styles.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, Texas is one. There's Memphis. There's Kansas City is another big one, right?
Yeah,
there's a bunch of people who... But they're all
this is
different.
Kojak's.
Carolina has a big one, too, right? For barbecue?
I don't know. I only like Kojak's. Everything else is... Yeah.
So your first defense of it's just different was a lie, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah. For me.
For you.
Yeah, for me. Good. No, when it comes to Texas, Texans are just like, no, it's Texas barbecue. Well, there's a difference between Texas barbecue and Kansas City barbecue. It's just a different flavor and everything else. When it comes to Kojak's barbecue over any other barbecue, this is just the best. Period.
You're that Texas? Keep him out of the state.
Yeah.
We'd all be better off.
Come see the show. You can buy your tickets. I still may be at Kojak's eating, but grab your tickets now for Tampa tonight, Orlando tomorrow, glennbeck.com/tour. Yesterday on television, I got a call from a woman who said, Glenn, I need your advice. I have a friend who's been a friend of mine since grade school. We grew up together, and we have been such close friends our whole lives. And she said, I think the turning point was on my Instagram page, I posted a picture of the new Jerusalem embassy, and that on the day that it was open, and I don't remember what she said, but basically, you know, I put emoji, clapping hand emojis. And she said, I think my friend just went crazy at that for some reason. She said, I don't know what else it could have been. She said, but I just got a letter from her saying, I can't be your friend anymore. I can't talk to you anymore. And she said, I don't know what to do. I want to write to her and tell her that she's wrong. And so what I suggested to her was remind her of your friendship. Remind her of all of the good times that you've had. Remind her. Don't accuse her of anything. Don't say anything that you're going to regret. Don't try to win. Just say, you are such a good friend. And friends should be able to disagree with one another. And I don't know what I've done. And if I've done something, please forgive me. But I just want to tell you that I will always feel this way about you, because we're more than just friends. We've been together since we were in fifth grade or fourth grade, whatever it was. Forgiveness is something that we all need to work on. And I want to play a piece of audio from StoryCorps. StoryCorps has really done some amazing things. We're telling the story of America, but they're now looking to try to get people across these political divides and come back together and just get to know each other again. Forget about politics. And there's been a couple of real healing things that I've heard. One was a woman who was marching with, it wasn't Antifa, but it was a lefty kind of thing. And there was another guy who was wearing a Trump hat, and he was protesting the protesters, you know, typical scene. Well, the protesters start surrounding this guy with a hat and they tear his hat off. Well, she's a Muslim and she was wearing a hijab, and she all of a sudden felt like they're attacking, like they attack me, like people attack me. And she said, back off. And they had this amazing breakthrough between two people who were on the other side of the protest. And StoryCorps got them together to tell their story, and it's really remarkable. I want to play another one for you. This one is Mary Johnson. Her son was killed by O'Shea Israel. They were in a fight. They were teenagers in a fight, and her son is killed by this guy. She's got so much anger and hatred in her heart, she can't even speak of it for about 12 years, until she goes to the prison. And she shows up at Stillwater Prison and she sits down and wants to talk to him. Listen to what happened. Here is O'Shea Israel, the guy who killed her son, and Mary Johnson.
You and I met at Stillwater Prison. I wanted to know if you were in the same mindset of what I remember from court, where I wanted to go over and hurt you. But you were not that 16-year-old. You were a grown man. I shared with you about my son.
And he became human to me. You know, when I met you, it was like, okay, this guy is real. And then when it was time to go, you broke down and started shedding tears. And the initial thing to do was just try to hold you up as best I can. Just hug you like I would my own mother, you know.
After you left the room, I begin to say, I just hugged the man that murdered my son. And I instantly knew that all that anger and the animosity, all the stuff I had in my heart for 12 years for you, I knew it was over, that I had totally forgiven you.
As far as receiving forgiveness from you, sometimes I still don't know how to take it, because I haven't totally forgiven myself yet. It's something that I'm learning from you. I won't say that I have learned yet, because it's still a process that I'm going through.
I treat you as I would treat my son, and our relationship is beyond belief. We live next door to one another.
Yeah, so you can see what I'm doing. You know, firsthand. Mm-hmm. We actually bump into each other all the time, leaving in and out of the house. And you know, our conversations, they come from, boy, how come you ain't called over here to check on me in a couple of days? You ain't even asked me if I need my garbage to go out.
Uh-huh.
I find those things funny, because it's a relationship with a mother for real.
Well, my natural son is no longer here. I didn't see him graduate. You know, you're going to college. I'll have the opportunity to see you graduate. I didn't see him get married. Hopefully one day I'll be able to experience that with you.
Just to hear you say those things and to be in my life in the manner that which you are is my motivation. It motivates me to make sure that I stay on the right path. You still believe in me. And the fact that you can do it despite how much pain I cause you, it's amazing.
I know it's not an easy thing, you know, to be able to share our story together, even with us sitting here looking at each other right now. I know it's not an easy thing. So I admire that you can do this.
I love you, lady.
I love you too, son.
Think of that. Think of that. Dave Isay is the founder and president of StoryCorps, and he's working on a new project called One Small Step. And we welcome you to the program and your friendship, Dave. Welcome.
It's great to be back, Glenn. Thank you.
So, first of all, that is one of the... I mean, you've got the greatest job in the world. You really do.
Yep.
That is just remarkable. If you're sitting there and you're thinking, I just can't get over my hatred of it, are you kidding me? If you can't solve a problem, and these two, she just called him my son. I love you, my son. Wow. What can't we get over? So, yeah, Dave, one small step. Tell me what the idea is and how people can get involved.
Sure. And I really appreciate you having me back on. And I agree with you. You know, it's funny about O'Shea Israel and Mary Johnson, who I actually had. They recorded this a couple of years ago at StoryCorps. I just had the privilege of meeting them for the first time a couple of months ago, last month, actually. And I think, you know, a lot of people, when they hear StoryCorps stories, talk about, you know, crying when they hear them. And most StoryCorps stories aren't sad. I think what makes people cry is just as you said about Mary and O'Shea, is that we're showing, first of all, it's authentic. It's the opposite of reality TV. You know, people aren't coming on to get famous or rich. It's just this act of love. And also we're showing kind of a path that we can all take. And when you hear humanity at its best, you're kind of walking on holy ground. And there's something, you know, sacred about that. And I think that's what, even the funny stories, people just start crying when they hear them. We've had 500,000 Americans participate in StoryCorps. It is an experience where two people come together with the help of a facilitator, or you can use our app. We have an app, and have a 40-minute conversation to talk about what's really important. People think of it as, if I had 40 minutes left to live, what would I say to this person who's so important to me? And then at the end of the interview, you get a copy and another goes to the Library of Congress. So your great, great, great grandkids can get to hear who your grandmother is or who your friend is through her voice. And you know the better than anybody the power of voice. It's like the soul is contained in the voice, right? So it really is, I think, in many ways, kind of the best expression of who we are as human beings, having these conversations as best that's possible in 40 minutes. We did start, and this is how I met you a few months ago, something completely different for us called One Small Step. And we just launched it about a month ago. And basically what we're doing is everybody who's participated in StoryCorps so far has known and loved each other. And what we're doing now is putting people across the political divides, people who think they hate each other, think that they feel contempt for this other human being or want them dead or whatever it is that's happened to this country. You know, I last talked to you a couple of weeks ago, and it seems like the sky's just darkened by the week. You know, it's worse now than it was then.
We opened the show up and said, oh, geez, it's been a rough week. And we were talking about, we say that every week, and it gets worse every week. Yeah, so, you know, but there are some good things that are happening.
No, there are a lot of good things that are happening.
Yeah.
And you know, the facilitators who travel the country in these interviews, when they come back, and we've had hundreds of them, and, you know, they record every kind of person. The first thing they'll say when you ask them, like, what did you learn from this experience? You're out on the road for a year, 2 years, is some variation of the Anne Frank quote that people are basically good. You know, and that's everywhere,
they are.
But I was listening to something this morning about talking about how, you know, the brain, like the brain pathways, it's like we're building the muscle of fear because we hear fear, fear, fear all the time. And you got to build the muscle of the truth is the basic goodness of people. And we've got to feel hope, you know.
I was just talking to a guy. He was a very, very important and influential CIA station chief operator kind of guy. And we were talking about how much is going on in the world. And when we got to solutions, we both said it's the human heart. You're not going to be able to fix anything unless we soften the human heart. And I mean, I thought for a warrior to get that was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the people who have been through the hardest things that have the wisdom of humanity, right? That's why at StoryCorps, there are a lot of times we work with people who are, you know, close to death or who have been through very difficult things, because they're the ones, you know, forget the celebrities and everybody else. You know, it's the people who've been through tough things that are the holders of wisdom. And I think it's, you know, and one of the, you know, theories of StoryCorps, and I don't even think it's a theory anymore, is just the idea that how difficult it is to hate someone when up close, you know. Yeah. And we talked about this last time, but, you know, we've forgotten as a country that, you know, that we belong to each other. And we've got to remember that.
So Dave, you're setting out and you're looking for people. In particular, people from, you know, the conservative, you know, Trump world, et cetera, because, you know, StoryCorps has heard a lot on NPR. And so, you know, everybody on the left knows what StoryCorps is. Very few on the right really kind of know what StoryCorps is. I do. I love it. You're looking for people that want to come together and figure out a way to each other without talking politics. So tell me what the experience would be like for people.
Sure. And you summarized it perfectly. It's not about finding common ground on a political issue. It's not about finding some middle resolution on abortion or whatever it is. It's just remembering that that a person who you disagree with is a living, breathing human being. And what happens is every StoryCorps interview is a 40-minute experience. You sit in a booth, or you can use our app, and we suggest questions for you to ask. We have, for One Small Step, which is this Across the Divides initiative, we have special One Small Step questions. And those questions are just talking about your life, you know, and you can pick whatever you want to talk about. A question like, who's been kindest to you in your life, or who are your parents, you know? And then it gets into kind of politics, but not in a straight on way. Questions like, was there a moment in your life? And at some point I'd love to, you know, talk to you about this. Like, what was a moment in your life that formed your political views?
Yeah. So I tell you what, Dave, next time you're on, bring another story. Next time you're on, let's go through that together a little bit.
Yeah.
Can
I'd
we?
Love that.
And if you want to get involved, you can just go to StoryCorps.org. StoryCorps.org, and please, I urge you, everything's going to be recorded in the National Archives. It's important that the good voices of real people are recorded for history purposes. Thank you so much. We'll talk again.
Have a great weekend, Glenn. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. All right, I want to tell you a little bit about Simply Safe, our sponsor this half hour. Simply Safe is going to keep your family safe. It's going to keep your doors locked, and anybody who opens them up, the windows open up, somebody breaks a window, they're going to alert police. Something catches on fire, they're going to alert the fire department. Most things happen in the middle of the night. In the middle of the day, not the middle of the night. Most people think, oh, I got to turn my alarm on because, you know, it's nighttime. No, they don't want to meet you, just like you don't want to meet them. So it's when you're gone. Now, opposite is happening, obviously, at your store. So if you're a small business owner, get Simply Safe. Because you turn it on during the day at home and turn it on at night when you leave. That's the way Simply Safe works, the way you want it to. Under your conditions, under your rules, there's no strings, there's no contracts. You own the system. If you want the monitoring, it's $14.99 a month. That's a steep, well, I hate to use that word, Simply Safe. That's a really good deal. At Simply Safe, simplysafe.com/Beck. Right now, they're giving you great discounts on their products. SimplySafeBeck.com. That's SimplySafeBeck.com. Welcome to the program. It is Friday. We have a very exciting program for you on Monday. You do not want to miss. If you're going to only listen to one show a year, Well, you've already listened to this one, so I guess. But if you're going to listen to two, listen Monday. You don't want to miss Monday's broadcast. And if you're anywhere in the Florida area, tonight we're live in Tampa. You can get your tickets to the show at glennbeck.com/tour. Tomorrow, we're in Orlando, glennbeck.com/tour. Make sure you come and see us. It's an awful lot of fun, and we'll see you back in Dallas on Monday. Don't miss it. Thanks to WFLA as well, our still kind of our home station in Florida, 970 WFLA. Thank you so much,
Glenn,
for your hospitality.
Beck, Mercury.